knocking your teeth loose with the best hockey coverage possible. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet in NHL dressing rooms across North America and on the World Wide Web, sportsnet.ca. Darren Millard along with Billy Jaffe and Scott Morrison. Among other things, Billy Jaffe learned that you have to wear socks when you're on television. Coming off the weekend with
Socks on.
Stromopoulos on Saturday and Sunday.
Socks isn't the issue. It's fancy socks like you have and Damian Cox have.
Today we're going to chat with Peter Chiarelli, Boston Bruins general manager. He will join us in just a little bit. They're going through an adjustment period without Zdeno Chara. And we'll also get to the whole John Scott incident. Should he necessarily be suspended for what he did? Didn't really violate the traditional rule in a sense. So we'll get to that. The San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Ducks were in a real doozy last night. Some new lines coming out of Toronto Maple Leaf practice. You guys ready for this? They hinted at it the first day of training camp. Toronto lost on the weekend to the Boston Bruins. So you've got Kadri now on the quote-unquote first line with Kessel and Lupel. And it's Bozak on the second line, separated from Kessel. He now skates between JVR and Clarkson. And then you have Leo Komarov, Winnick, and Santorelli on the third line. He doesn't play his fourth line, so we won't go there. Are you guys surprised at that at all?
Not after Saturday's performance. I'm not. They muddled around on the ice. They didn't do much against the Bruins team that was missing Zdeno Chara, but played a very good game. I give the Bruins a lot of credit, but still. No, I mean, you got to find something. His third line, though, regularly, Scott, had been most consistent line. So the question becomes, are you breaking that line up for the type of game that you want to play, that aggressive puck possession, drive hard to the net type game? But you got to take that chance to get these other guys going too, I guess.
Well, and to Darren's point, they came out early and said that they weren't going to be afraid to break up that line if they felt that they need to kickstart things and maybe try and get some balance scoring, whatever the motivation was. I guess the double-edged sword, Billy, is with the third line, is that I think Winnick's probably best suited to be on that line.
Yep.
Then the question becomes, is Clarkson best suited to be on the second line, or was he playing better because of where he was? And as you well know, I mean, when you're on that third line, the expectations are wildly different than if you're on the second line.
Yeah, I guess my comment is the Leafs probably aren't good enough to worry about numbered lines.
Right.
One, two, three, and whatever four means for them. And in the last few games, they played 7D, so it's only been two-thirds of a fourth line. They have to be, and this is where I think people get caught up too much in the numbers. Find the best combinations for that moment. Find at least, and I'm a believer in that pair system that a lot of coaches go with, two guys that are regularly together. Find that third guy. And for a team like the Leafs that can, you need, you know, they're going to battle to make the playoffs all year. Find every 5 to 10 games that combination that can work to get the maximize the most out of that time.
And right now they got to get lines that just are working.
Exactly.
Will outwork the opposition. And I think on the nights when this team has not been successful, and I was in Ottawa, so I didn't see the game on Saturday night, but from all indications, Toronto wasn't the hardest working team.
Well, not when you consider that Zdeno Chara wasn't in the lineup and that you would have assumed that the Maple Leafs would have been more assertive, and you didn't see that.
More excited?
Just take the play.
They didn't break out well. They didn't handle the puck well. But again, I give the Bruins credit who, at times this year, their neutral zone and their defensive zone has not been great, and they did play well. I think losing Zdeno Chara, and we can touch on this with GM Peter Chiarelli in a few minutes, but I think in a way, guys, is going to snap the Bruins or force the Bruins to snap out of their inconsistent defensive awareness.
You must be really excited about this.
About what?
Well, being a Nesson guy and then having the Bruins
general
manager.
I'm a Sportsnet guy.
You're a Nesson guy. You're an American who
dabbles
up here with Sportsnet.
Okay,
really,
not to pull another host type moment on you. I'm up here more than I am down there. I've got more dates up here. With,
really?
Yeah. Well,
see what we can do about that.
you're a former goalie, aren't you?
Yeah, for those that missed it, Doug McLean called Billy Jaffe out for goaltending.
Maybe I would have had a better...
And Billy didn't play goal at Michigan. Might have got more time on the
ice.
That's
what you say. I may have had a better... I need to
might
talk to
Rhett
about that.
Might have been the career path to go. Yeah.
So we've got Peter Chiarelli, Boston Bruin general manager, coming up. If you look at the schedule, and not to rankle the Toronto Maple Leaf fan base anymore.
But you will.
But tomorrow night, the Leafs hook up with the Buffalo Sabres at Air Canada Center. If the Sabres... Now, widely considered the front runner going into the season, and they'll battle Carolina, apparently, for 30th overall in the National Hockey League, are the Buffalo Sabres. Mm-hmm. Not considered to be a very good team at all, and maybe getting worse as the season goes on. It's early, but if the Sabres win tomorrow night, they're only 1 point behind the Toronto Maple Leafs through the course of 9 games for Toronto. That's a regulation Buffalo win. So just... there's just a little perspective on how poor the first 10 games could potentially go for the Toronto Maple Leafs if they don't perform well in the next couple. And compare that to how great Toronto was in their first 10 games a year ago and still found themselves on the outside looking in.
I think the people in Toronto are... I don't know. I mean, the feel that I get there, they, I don't know. Last year, I felt they felt their team was going to be better. This year, I kind of feel that they felt it was going to be struggle to. They were very unsure what to make of this team. That's my take on it. And I don't know if I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I don't know if this surprises them as much. It's, I guess, surprising that I didn't have them in the playoffs. I personally didn't have them in the playoffs this year. So am I alarmed by this? No. Are you alarmed by this right now?
I'm not surprised.
Right. That's
alarmed. No. Surprised. Yeah. No.
There's a lot of disappointed people. I'll tell you that.
Well, I get that. It's too early for, I mean, it's
too early for conclusions.
Yes.
But they're burning home games, which is, right. It's well and good to say you're playing well on the road, but you're going to regret if you don't do better on home ice.
They're
at some point.
1-4 at home. And I mentioned the game tomorrow night and the result if it goes in Buffalo's favor in regulation. With no other motivation other than to make people completely panic.
Yeah, no disrespect to Buffalo should Buffalo win, but people here will look at it and say that's a travesty. From a Leaf perspective.
Yes. Oh, I don't think you're disrespecting Buffalo by saying that.
No,
they're a bad hockey team.
But no, give them credit that they work hard and win a hockey game. But in Toronto, it will be a travesty, and it will be, I don't know,
if Toronto's
panic
there,
is the word,
if
but
if Toronto's
people
there
will
at
be,
game 40, Scott, if they're there at game 40, we're talking within 3 to 5 points of Buffalo. Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Oh, major that, disaster.
Yeah, that's, we're talking, it's not that I don't base anything on the first 10 games, but we really don't figure
Why?
Things out.
Why? When you play eight preseason games and you're...
Come on, preseason for most teams, it's nothing.
I don't get why we write off the first 10 games.
I don't write them off. I'm saying I'm starting to figure out what teams are about, what teams need, what teams' identities will be. I kind of expected mediocrity out of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So Montreal should not be judged on a 7-1 record?
I think that they should be. I think that you can say that they have continued the progression from last year, but I'm not ready to anoint them Stanley Cup champions. I'm not.
And I think you could safely argue, not that, you know, they're 7-1, they've had a great start, but they've been flawed.
Their first 4 games on the road were...
fall behind every
right.
time.
It was great. It was great.
Nice
how they
to see
did
him come
it.
Back.
Yes.
But you're not going to do that all the time.
Right.
So they've had some blemishes.
So on one
in
hand, you guys say...
But coaches and managers say... give a team 10 games, and minimum. That's when you start to see what they're all about.
Right.
But you not necessarily need the 10 to get a clear indication of what some teams are about.
That's what I want to go to. So on one hand, you're saying Toronto is what it is, and this record shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. On the other hand, it's Let's wait and see.
I'm not giving them a pass. I'm not saying it's a free pass. I'm saying if you're talking about this, is this surprise start and the fact that they're close to the Buffalo Sabres a real surprise? No, that's the answer. Do they need to do something? Sure, if they can, absolutely. But I felt that they needed to do something.
Okay, let's go through the Canadian teams, and I'm totally going in a different direction here than I intended. So Calgary is 5-4-1.
Yep.
Are they that team at game 40?
Are they that team? It'll be tough to be right there, but Bob Hartley's got him working hard. He's got him, like last year, got him hard, a little more developed, and they have better goaltending. So I think they're gonna battle to be there. I think they're gonna be right around that.
Yeah, they're a hardworking team, and you know, and Hartley was the first to point it out, and not that it was a great secret by any stretch of the imagination, but they survived that road trip in large part because their goaltending was all world.
Edmonton's won three in a row to get within one game of break even. They hook up with Montreal tonight.
Good test.
Underachieve.
Good game tonight.
Overachieve, or is that what they are? 3-4-1.
That's what they are.
I still think that's what they. I mean, this is a team that's what they are. That they're going to. They're better on the details of things the last few games, which is so important because that was their weakness. But details are tiring and very hard to keep up. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep this up.
It'd be two good teams. Well,
they're getting fantastic.
Two high-scoring teams.
You know, what I'm curious about there,
and playing better at home.
Yeah. What I'm curious about real there is Scrivens has been great the last few.
He's one of the NHL's three stars.
Right, as he should be. Is he the type of guy, like a lot of goalies, though, that need constant repetition, meaning back into the net to maintain that level? If they go 1A, 1B with Fast, since he's starting to get ready to come back, he's practicing, et cetera, does that hinder the goaltending? And I cannot imagine that they would, because I can't imagine Dallas Eakins or the staff there would say, let's just see what we got. If Scrivens is the guy, and for now, he's earned it, I think, for at least the next whatever, even with a bad game, go with him.
Montreal, 7-1. Again, in Edmonton tonight, Sportsnet West. City, Montreal. Overachieve? Are they this good?
I think they're Eastern Conference this good.
Mm-hmm. I think they're still
not 7-1.
Yeah, they're not 7-1 good, but I think they're one. Again, this doesn't surprise me. They're one of the better teams in the East. Absolutely.
Okay, that's three teams, and you guys have said their records in the first 10 games are what we expected from them. They are what they are. Just prove. You people that say the first 10 games.
Don't write them off because of 10 games, but they are where we expected them to be. Not Montreal necessarily.
Got four wins in the first seven games, points in five of them.
I don't think Ottawa's as good.
You're just saying that now.
No, I'm not.
Now you're just saying it to be difficult.
If you watched last night, and I was wearing socks, I still don't get that. If you watched last night, said the same thing. They're relying way too heavily on their goaltending. Craig Anderson was outstanding last night.
Was he ever good?
17, outstanding. 17 goals. They really struggle to put it in the net.
Okay, I'm going to stop there. Scott Darling played goal for the Chicago Blackhawks last night. He's 6'6". What did you say, 240?
232.
He looks like the thinnest person ever.
Maybe he's just abiding by the NHL goalie standards for equipment.
So the other guys aren't?
I don't know.
I sent Kay Whitmore a note last night and said, tell me, like, is this guy the only guy being checked compared to the other guys?
First of all, I want to ask from a goaltender's perspective, since you are one, what did you think of the sock stripes on the front of those red pillows of his, or those pads, to mimic the behind his, so he has constant stripes like a player, like a skater?
It's that manufacturer also makes the gear for Eddie Lack, who's got the Canucks logo on it. So it's different. It's unique.
Yep. He's 6'6", 232. And
that's why he looked thin.
Maybe
socks.
It's all
it looks like
stripes.
He was just wearing shin
it's
pads.
It's all about stripes. Yeah. You look.
I like guys that get creative with their gear. Why don't guys?
There was
get a
minor league goalie, and I can't remember what his name, but he had his pads were brilliant. I saw a tweet of this in the summer. They were like the mesh in the net. That's how his pads looked.
That's cool.
What a distraction.
Ray Emery's got beautiful.
Brilliant.
Yes, and have fun with it. Right, we have fun with the masks.
It's called goalieflage. Is the
camouflage?
Yeah. So it's goalieflage and stomp equipment. Darren Stomp.
Yeah.
Does a lot of that.
Our good friend.
Yeah.
By the way, Scott Darling, you say he's skinny. I'd say he's in shape. One of the top five best conditioned athletes at the end of the Chicago Blackhawks training camp. So obviously, the youngster who has been literally all over the hockey world in North America, from the Southern Pro to the East Coast to the American and the leagues, took himself extremely seriously this summer and got himself in the best shape of his life.
I love the way how he described the emotions last night. I was a little bit terrified and excited. And in the end, I was happy.
Well, 30, that would be like basically the equivalent, where he's from is Lamont, Illinois. It'd be the equivalent of growing up in Markham.
Yeah.
And playing for the Leafs after playing.
And two homegrown goalies last night.
Yes. Yeah. Not the first time that's happened. Al Montoya is also from Chicago, and he played against Craig Anderson, too.
Tweets coming in to at Darren Millard. Keep them coming. I'll read a few of them in a little bit. But right now, let's slide over to some conversation around the Boston Bruins. Here's their general manager, Peter Chiarelli. Oh, you wouldn't believe how excited Billy Jaffe is, Peter, being in the chair in Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard and Scott Morrison, and having somebody that he talks about on a regular basis and talks to on a regular basis from his work at Nesson. He is just giddy.
Well, that's good to know.
Do you want to
hired in Boston, Darren Millard?
Do you want to open up the conversation?
No,
with
I
Peter?
Want you to. You're the host.
So Peter, were you what were you expecting Saturday night, knowing that it was going to be the first game without Zdeno Chara from your lineup? Because obviously there was so much discussion about your captain being out.
I was hoping that our defensive group and our defensive attitude would tighten up a bit. Probably 3.5 of the last 5 games going into that game where our game is starting to come around. The game before we had a great third period, but defensively the prior periods after losing Chara, we weren't so good the second period. So, we've lost him before for a period of time in our group. Our group tightens up and they accept and embrace larger roles, and sometimes it takes a couple of games. But I was hoping the first step in that transition would happen, and it certainly did. I thought our battle level, especially, which is important for defending, was real good. I saw Seinberg and Hamilton embrace that top pair, and I thought Krug and McQuaid played well too. Defensively, we were breaking out well. So, kind of that first step in that temporary transition, I thought was good.
Peter, I know you've made very tough decisions in your years as the general manager of the Boston Bruins, but as you reflect back on this past summer and obviously the Boychuk trade and now the Chara injury, if you ever had a moment in the last few days of saying, this might be the most strenuous time you've had as a GM sitting in that chair for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, no, these are hard decisions, but no, we've had harder decisions. It's just that the ones that are happening at the time seem to be the highlighted the most by other people. We've had a lot of difficult decisions, and this one wasn't any less difficult, but they're oftentimes those decisions aren't popular to begin with, and sometimes they stay unpopular, but more often than not, they turn out to be people accept them. So when you sit in the manager's chair, you have to make these decisions, and you hope that you expect them to be right, and sometimes they're not, but we'll stand by them.
I think what Billy was really meaning to say, Peter, was, do you wish there wasn't a salary cap?
Yeah, well, that's something that you've got to deal with, and you'd like to keep everybody every year, and unfortunately you can't.
Yeah, part of the challenge. How's Lucic's game? Is it coming on?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Did you see our game Saturday night?
I was in Ottawa on Saturday, so yeah, I didn't.
He played well Saturday, and I think really the last 4 or 5 games he's really starting to pick it up. Part of that is that he's got his centerman back, but part of it is that he had wrist surgery in the off season and really wasn't, for the first part of the camp, wasn't really engaging, couldn't engage physically, missed games. So I think his timing and his skating is coming back, but in the last 4 or 5 games, he's played quite well.
Hockey Central in noon with Darren Millard, Billy Jaffe, and Scott Morrison chatting with Boston Bruin General Manager Peter Chiarelli.
Peter, how proud were you of the play of Dougie Hamilton on Saturday night, given the fact that the big situation, you needed him to step up, et cetera, but also doing it in his hometown is, you know, of course he's excited. He's been here before, but it was a big moment, it seemed like, for him on Saturday night playing as well as he did.
He had, as you know, I think you saw, he had a terrific training camp. And he stumbled a bit out of the gate. And he's a young, still a very young player, so you can take that, you can accept that and know that he's going to get better. But, you know, when Z goes down and you move him to, well, he's already in top pair, but, you know, maybe a bit of a security blanket was gone. I thought he was really, really good. And I thought, you know, the puck moving side of it, the passing, all that stuff is very good. The defending side of it, the physicality, I thought was outstanding too, so... He had a real good game. That was a good pair. I thought Dennis played well too. I think they're compatible, and hopefully we'll see more of that.
We were having the chat just about the evaluation of teams through the first 10 games and whether or not you really buy into a club's record, or you give them a little more time. Individually, Peter, when you watch your team in the opening 10, how much evaluation, how much stock do you put in their performances as a sole player?
So you're talking how do I assess each player?
Yeah.
How do I assess the team?
Or the players themselves. It's like Brad Marchand, for instance.
Well, generally speaking, I mean, our team has been probably deserving of a 5-5 record. Maybe there's a couple we could have had. Maybe there's a couple that we shouldn't have had. You know, in the last 4 or 5 games, I've liked what we've been doing for the most part. Individually, you know, if you want me to talk about Brad, I think his game is coming around. He's still has to find the net a little more. He's got a good shot. His speed has been better than it had been in the past. His conditioning has been better. He agitates, he forechecks, he scores, and we've, you know, those are parts of his game that will come. He's, you know, for me, he's had an average grade in general. But individually, like, you know, you assess these guys every game. I grade these guys every game. We grade them, and then you look at segments, whether they're 5 games, 10 games, 20 games, and then you look at the whole year. So we're 10 games in. We're starting to play a better game, even with losing Z. I thought in our last period against the Islanders, we played well, and then we played well the whole game against Toronto. So that's where we're at right now.
Is there a point in the season, just to get to that 10-point or 10-game threshold that Darren's talking about, is there a point in the season, Peter, where you say, whether it's a lot of managers have said in the past, U.S. Thanksgiving is kind of that time in a season, but is there a point where you say, okay, that's a big enough body of work, now I can really know what this team is all about?
I don't know if there's a magical point. The Thanksgiving date is just kind of a milestone, because a lot of the teams that are in the playoffs at American Thanksgiving are usually in it, but you know, last year I think 2 or 3 weren't, so it's not always accurate. No, not really. I look at every 10 games and try and make an assessment, you know, cumulatively. I'll add up to 10. You know, everyone talks about the quarter mark. Here's what you're going to have. I don't believe in that either. I think you just have to continually assess, and then if you have to adapt on the fly, then you do that.
Just a note. Only 5 of 40 teams have made the playoffs since 2005-06, who are 4 points out on November 1st, and two of them occurred last year in Dallas and Philadelphia. So just to pick up on what Peter was saying.
Peter, are the phones noticeably, quieter the first 10, you know, first month or so, because people are the cliche, analyzing their own team, finding what they have, or is it kind of status quo as far as people, you know, other GMs and other teams checking in with you?
You've got a general kind of dialogue that you have But they're not very busy for the first 20, 25 games. But you have general conversations with guys over the course of that time, but they're not that busy.
Who phones you the most just to pick up the phone, just to shoot the breeze? Is there one guy that just phones you? You always know he's just hitting the bush to see what's going to shake out of the tree.
No, I don't really want to disclose that, but we all have our guys that we talk to just to see what's going on. But as I said, it's not really that busy right now.
Well, then go out and make something happen for us. 5-5 to start the year. Thanks for hooking up with us on Hockey Central at noon, and continued success, especially without one of the key cogs in your lineup. Thanks for taking the time.
All right, thanks, guys.
There's Peter Chiarelli, the general manager of the Boston Bruins, who certainly look like they're playing a little bit better, but the challenge will be...
The funny thing is, Krejci's back, and I think people are realizing how good David Krejci is. Not that they didn't know, but without him, Lucic struggled. Now they're getting Lucic going. The last few games have been excellent for Milan Lucic. He's been a beast out there. Seth Griffith, young kid, played in London. He's getting his game going as that winger. But their best line, game in, game out, has been Carl Soderberg's line. And it's going to be an interesting situation there, because Carl Soderberg is finishing a two-year deal at $1 million a year. And he's a wonderful guy. And he's a monster out there in the sense, 6'4", 225 pounds or so. But is somebody going to pay him huge money after this season to be their number, let's call them two centermen? But along with Chris Kelly and Louis Erickson, they've been game in, game out the Bruins' best line.
They got a lot of credit around that locker room for the play of Sean Thornton over the last number of years, just because he could go in, he could make some team guy, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see if there's any fall off of that. Not obviously not saying Sean Thornton is a point producer. He's not going to make or break your team.
Leadership. You lose Sean Thornton, again, a wonderful guy, well-respected in the room. You trade Johnny Boychuk, wonderful guy, well-respected in the room. And then Jerome Iginla, who came in and fit seamlessly. Mm-hmm. Not just 30 goals, but fit seamlessly into that room. So on top of Sean, who was a major, major influence in that room, you lose those two other guys.
Is Gagne a good fit?
Very good fit. Very good fit, very good guy. Veteran. Coaches love that veteran presence. Versatile. Fitting right now on the fourth line, but can swing up to the first line too if needed. Penalty kill and even a potentially power play.
And you mentioned the Peter Dougie Hamilton. You look at his ice time on the season, 21:44.
And that's by the way, that's conservative right now. You know, other teams are playing their big guys 25, 26.
But it's the most on that team.
On the team, right. But even Chara wasn't playing 25 minutes a game. And Dougie Hamilton, if he gets it going consistently, it's going to be watch out world. He's going to be going.
Boy, a whole new level of disappointment around the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Why now? Did they lose again today? We didn't know.
It's an acquaintance of yours has come out with a tweet.
Okay.
And I will read you that when we continue.
The suspense.
This one will surprise you a little bit. To the depths that the Toronto Maple Leafs have sunk to get some emotion out of this person is rather startling. That and the Hockey Central 3 stars. You want to stay with us. NHL Network in the United States. Sportsnet 590. The Fan simulcast on Sportsnet. It's Hockey Central at noon.
Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590. The Fan. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Couple of games in the National Hockey League tonight on Sportsnet. Edmonton at home to the Montreal Canadiens, who start a three-game trip. Edmonton looking for a fourth straight win and get back to break even. And then you have the New York Rangers at MSG up against the Minnesota Wild. Darren Millard along with Billy Jaffe at B Jaffe on Twitter.
My account. You did. You touched.
Oh yeah, I retweeted Twitter. Something for you. And we have Scott Morrison, Morrison SNet on Twitter. Somebody's not very happy. Do we have any music? Do we have any music to go along with this? This is beautiful.
Canada's Songbird.
Yes. Anne Murray.
Beneath its snowy mantle, cold and
This is a little more upbeat than what how she feels about her her Toronto Maple Leafs right now. Anne Murray, a verified Twitter account saying, "I wish the Leafs were better." They have taken the Toronto Maple Leafs have taken Anne Murray.
That's not exactly harsh.
Made her just absolutely devastated about this this club's performance. Oh, you can get rid of that. Anne Murray's first ever appearance on Hockey Central.
We got that, by the way, off of Millard's iPod.
That's his ringtone.
It's one of my, it might be one of my power songs when I go for a run. You never know. Last night featured the Washington Capitals falling to Ryan Miller and the Vancouver Canucks. Ottawa stymied by the Chicago Blackhawks, and San Jose beat Anaheim in a fight-filled game. Winnipeg over Colorado 2-1 in overtime. The Hockey Central three stars before we delve into John Scott. And well, you could go to a couple of different places. The Winnipeg Jets picked up a much-needed victory, and you saw a little bit of nastiness out of Dustin Byfuglien, and he really asserted himself in one great shift where a couple of Avalanche got in his grill, and he went right at them, and it was a two-for-one special from the Colorado Avalanche, and Dustin Byfuglien setting the tone. That is the first star. Billy?
First of all, I agree with you about Byfuglien. He was outstanding. My first star was Tommy Wingles of the San Jose Sharks. The more I get to watch this kid play, the more I'm impressed with him. Tommy Wingles leads the San Jose Sharks now in shots by a few, but he also leads them by more than a few, by a boatload, in hits. And he had 10 yesterday. He's putting up some points. He's got really, really good feel about him. This is the type of power forward that they need in San Jose, and I think he will develop into a regular second, third line guy because, again, he can do it all. He drives the net. He'll run you over. He'll get in the face of opponents. Saw him do it in Boston. Saw him do it last night. Love the way that this kid plays, and he's bringing it. San Jose needs this type of player regularly.
That was the longest commentary ever about Tommy Wingles. But congratulations.
He deserves it.
No, I know. A soliloquy there.
Yeah. He deserves it.
Well, my star is Scott Darling. We talked about him earlier in the show, the Chicago goaltender. 32 saves, and if there were hockey passports, his would be fascinating to look at. Where you see his resume and where he's played over the years and the journey to make it to the National Hockey League. The first, I never even knew the league existed, Southern Professional Hockey League alumni to make it to the NHL. And as I mentioned earlier, I just loved his comment after the game where he said, "I felt a little bit terrified and a little bit excited, but at the end I was happy." And put on a pretty good show for Chicago last night.
232.
That was a good show.
I mean, it's got to be just incredibly emotional for a hometown guy. And he's been to the games.
Eddie Balfour.
And then to know that anthem and that presentation is going to be there, and then he's going to stand in that crease.
Well, what's even more impressive is that he grew up in the 90s in Chicago when there were some doldrums, let's call it, of the Chicago
Less
Blackhawks.
Less than good teams?
Years. yes. And I was, I fell into broadcasting the first year the Blackhawks didn't make the playoffs in about 28 years. It felt really good being a part of that. And there were some interesting years there, but he was more of a young kid fan, again, right before they started getting bad. Stuck with the team through the early 2000s, and now, being a Chicagoan, I can tell you, as a former Chicago, it's the hottest ticket in town. It's the greatest show, sports show right now going on in Chicago.
20,000 people plus at the United Center. So last night, the San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Ducks got at it. There was over 100 minutes in penalties, all kinds of fights. But then you have the return of the enforcer and crossing the line. Tell us what John Scott did and why he's facing supplementary discipline.
Well, he came off the bench. It was at the 6:04 mark of the third period in a game that was getting nasty because there is intense rivalry there. He came off the bench and made a beeline for Tim Jackman. Made no attempt to even fake to get into the play. All he had to do was take 3 or 4 seconds and turn his skate blades and you put a stick on the ice and pretend to call for a pass or whatever. But instead, he went immediately towards Tim Jackman, who they'd gotten into a fight earlier in the game, which I give Tim Jackman huge props for, by the way, fighting a man that big. And, you know, Tim did what he had to do there. But anyways, it's not about, there's no legal line change, nothing like that. It's about coming off the bench with basically deliberate intent to start a fight. If the officials got it bang on.
So it's not a rule violation, it's a supplemental discipline.
Well, he gets a misconduct for doing that. So there is a rule violation there for coming off the bench. And just to make it clear, if he came off under the five-minute mark and got called for the instigator, whatever, then he'd be automatic suspension. But this is up to the league, whether it's 1, 2, or it could go up to 10-game suspension. Stephane Quintal and his group will have to decide this. I'm guessing, I'm feeling it will be something. Small, not. I don't feel a 10-gamer. But I'm guessing it'll be something.
Previously, it seems like they've been 1 and 2 gamers,
right?
Depending on how bad it's turned out.
But it's an easy one.
It's ironic that all of this happened at a time when people were commending him for being still in the league at a time when, you know, the quote unquote fighters have been leaving the game and that he was forced to play. So,
Scotty, he was coming off the greatest performance, greatest week of his career.
I know. That's what I'm saying. The irony is
that goal he scored against Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's highlight. I mean, not because he scored it. That's a highlight reel goal. That was outstanding for him. But this was not outstanding. And this is where he's got to be in control. And his team, his coaches and his teammates need to be in control. I mean, I don't know if it, to me, does this send a message? Do you guys, you know, of course, I thought the team toughness of San Jose and guys standing up to Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff, who are two awesome all-around players and aren't afraid to get involved, was more impressive than for
a team that lost. Corey Perry was a beast.
He was
in that game.
He was. That's what makes Corey Perry special: his willingness to be involved in all things.
The goalie coach told me one time, if that guy doesn't know where it's going when he's shooting it, how are you supposed to stop it? And that's the way I would describe the John Scott goal.
I don't know, man. He picked that corner beautifully. Beautifully.
Okay, 10 shots. How many times has he hit that spot?
I don't care. He did that time. That's all that matters.
LA Kings lose Anze Kopitar, but run the table on this homestand. And the numbers are just ridiculous for the Stanley Cup champions right now, who will start a road trip in Philadelphia. But traditionally a bit of a slow starting team. Not the case in taking advantage of a home schedule that was heavily weighted towards the LA Kings being around a familiar environment, and they absolutely lit it up. I mean, Jonathan Quick right on out. It's goofy.
Well, they've only played one road game, but yeah, you take advantage of this scenario, and they have. And that 70s line has been brilliant. Quick has been outstanding. They've only given up a dozen goals in 8 games, which is
16 of
crazy.
21 goals by the 70s line.
Yeah.
16. And does it feel like they have all their eggs in one basket or
no points?
That's the thing. Those are the guys that are delivering.
It just speaks to their depth.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Tanner Pearson's cruising along at about a 47% shooting accuracy.
It'll keep up.
Yeah, it has to.
Yes, I mean, it'll keep up.
He might even get better the way they're going right now. But it's a tough road trip. I don't know whether you saw Nolan last night.
No, I didn't.
Tapping Scotty Hartnell. So Hartnell's lining up for the faceoff, and Nolan's on the LA Kings bench, and he starts tapping him with a stick, and Hartnell turns around and gives him a good waves a stick at him. He got a penalty for it.
By the way, I saw
best timing, but
sorry to interrupt. I saw a tweet, and I'm sorry.
I'm used to it on this.
Sorry, I'm not yelling at you though. Tweet on right here that said that it's good news for Nick Foligno, who was hurt in that game, running into
the linesman.
Yeah, I believe it was Shane Heyer, I believe. It was just part of the play's head, ran into him. And I apologize to whoever tweeted it out there. I'm not quick with it. I'm sure you're an expert. You can maybe get it. But there was movement and everything appeared to be good, but I don't have any other update. It seems like tentatively good stuff for Foligno, who had to be taken off on a stretcher.
The Pittsburgh Penguins have a news conference scheduled for this afternoon in which Jimmy Rutherford and the team physician are going to be present. It's a really funny one because some coaches we've talked to, they don't know what's going on. Players, they're on the ice at practice, but it's an odd one because it's rare that a general manager calls a news conference without everybody kind of knowing that there's something in the pipe. But then you throw in the team physician and Jimmy says he's fine, right?
Yeah.
You talked to him?
Yeah.
And people on the team don't know. They're wondering as well.
Doesn't appear to be anybody missing from practice.
By the way, Aaron Portsline was the one who tweeted. And I'm quoting him from the Post Columbus Dispatch. Nick Foligno has no structural damage to his neck. No word, though, from the club if he sustained concussion or how much time, if any, he'll miss. It's good news. I mean, it's good news.
When he was out being wheeled off in the stretcher last night, he was waving the hand. So that was positive. Winnipeg Jets beat the Colorado Avalanche yesterday 2-1 in overtime.
Good game.
Really good game.
Yeah.
But there's still two hockey clubs right there who there's no rhythm to their games necessarily. Winnipeg offensively, Little and Ladd score. But I think Winnipeg has so much more to offer offensively. And Vancouver, a win over Washington. And this has not been a fun road trip for Alexander Ovechkin. Through Edmonton, Calgary, and now Vancouver. At a time when he went out on the road, Scotty, there is some flair to his game. And he's been shut down. Not only not producing points, but not really getting chances. And I don't know whether that's getting used to the system, not having last change with Barry Trotz and finding a different way or what.
Well, I think, can I do what I did for my my college testing boards, all the above?
E? Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I didn't do too well on them. But
because you know they're going to throw an all of the above in eventually, right?
They do.
They have to. Yeah. And that just screws you up even more. If they wouldn't throw the all of the above in.
This one seemed logical. This one seemed logical.
Exactly.
That one, and then I said, you know, what the heck? I mean, I...
that ripped me out of right answers more than it helped me having that all of the above option.
As Joel said in Risky Business, sometimes you just got to say, you know, and just go with right there.
It's funny, though, because Stamkos had a quiet tour through Alberta as well.
Yes.
So
he had one good, and then
no numbers.
It's not an easy trip for those teams. I was part of the Atlanta Thrashers organization, and it's a big trip going out there, and you get, you know, the players are jazzed up to play, but I still contend the teams on the West Coast have a significant advantage over the teams on the East Coast on the big trips. They do it more, they do it better, they're used to it, they understand it. Mm-hmm. And you're going into these environments, and it feels...
Plus, the West is better.
And yes, the West is better, too. But with regard to Ovechkin, I do think that there seems to be good trust, good confidence, good transition going on from what was there to what is there now under Barry Trotz. And, you know, he's doing little things, too. And it's not about... To me, people said, oh, well, Barry Trotz is going to try and change him. I don't know. I mean... Didn't it feel a lot differently, guys, what John Tortorella was trying to do with regard to changing guys in Vancouver versus what Barry Trotz is trying to do with his star guy in Washington? At least it feels different to me. It feels...
Well, he came right out and said, I'm not going to turn him into a Selke trophy winner.
Yeah.
And I respect his offensive ability, but when you don't have the puck, you got to want to get it back. Yeah.
Tweets coming into at Darren Millard. Not a huge fan of the new music. Might be time to turn back the clock there. Oh, I wonder if that was just they tuned in when Anne-Marie was singing. Might be the case.
And Anne-Marie's not too thrilled with her Leafs.
No, she's not. And we wonder why big-name free agents don't come to Toronto. Relax media. It's 8 games in. And they play some good teams at Darren Millard. I'm being blamed now.
It's all your fault.
So Billy Jaffe's on here. You were working for the Hawks the year they first missed the playoffs?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Then you called games for the Atlanta Thrashers.
Never made the playoffs while I was there.
And now they don't exist.
Nope.
Well, stop by any time here, hey?
Do we sense a pattern?
Yes.
I would get in as many shifts as you can before the next time you work with me and make sure you got clauses in your contract.
Yes. Thanks to Billy Jaffe, Scott Morrison, as well as Peter Chiarelli for joining us.
I did make the playoffs, though, the year I went there.
Well, you can't trust anything that happens there.
That's fair.
That's just completely odd.